This is Delicious Matt Bear, and you're listening to Footstuff.
What do I look like now?
You actually, now that you say it, you kind of look like Ethan Hawke.
Well, hey, gang, and welcome to Footstuff Podcast, episode 38. We are ostensibly live and recording from Studio 7, just outside of New York State's largest wilderness area. Footstuff Podcast brings you stories of adventure, antics, and activism from around the country. You can subscribe to this high-quality outdoor recreation comedy on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and SoundCloud. My name is Ethan Hawke, and I'm joined tonight by an inkling that Footstuff Podcast Season 2 will be even hairier than Season 1. Because we have young Robert.
We have
in the studio.
Seasons.
This is season two.
It's fall.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and young Robert is in studio tonight. Give us a shout out, young Robert. He's back, hopefully with some poems. And young Robert's hair is beautiful and luscious. So to my immediate studio left is Delicious Matt Bear.
No sleeping, still chimney sweeping.
Tonight in Wade's lounge is Justin Devendorf.
I don't have something to say, but I couldn't come up with one.
Pockets.
There we go.
Pockets.
There we
like go. Pockets. That's a good pockets. One.
I like
it.
It is
a good one.
I like it.
I'm writing that down.
Please.
Next to Pockets is the inimitable Jeremy Utz.
Hot Glacier.
Ooh.
Is that a new...
Like Hot Tang?
Is that a new... I was going to ask, is that a new Gatorade flavor?
It has to do with my footstep story for the night.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Teaser. Wade Bastion
Pockets
is...
was pretty good, though. Yeah. I was going to say Dumbbell.
I like Pockets better. But Dumbbell's pretty good.
Wade Bastion is out on assignment this week to ascertain the Northeast Bigfoot population. But this week, like we do every week, we bring you hiker news. We're going to do a deep dive this week, as Survey Says. We're going to talk about surveying in the Adirondacks and beyond.
Cheap joke. That was a cheap joke. That was a cheap joke.
It was. Yes. But like we do every week, we talk about a little bit of foot stuff. Jeremy, the audience can barely wait. I know it was only a minute, but we've got to tell them what Hot Glacier means.
All right. Yeah. So I was obviously last weekend I was out at work all weekend, and
you seem like you were hit by a hot glacier.
I feel like my skin is still really red and windburned, even though I know it's not. It feels like it is. The weather forecast for like last Friday and Saturday was looking pretty pretty intense. There was a lot of snow, snowstorms, like high winds, that kind of thing moving in.
We should also remind Footstuff Nation that you don't live where most people live. You live in a valley in the deep recesses of Adirondack wilderness.
In an actual shed. Yeah, so Friday was a really nice day. We got some snowfall, but it was like sunny in the morning and that kind of thing. Beautiful day, so I did not go hiking. I sat around and did nothing. Saturday, it was calling for big snowstorm, sustained winds of like 40 to 50 miles an hour. But in the morning, when I woke up, it was sunny, it was calm, it was warm, and I was like, man, I don't know about this snowstorm. It was supposed to have already have started, but it hadn't started, so I decided to go out. And my initial idea was, I'm just going to check out Benny's Root Canal. Like, I'm just going to go, maybe hike up a little bit and like check it out. You know, like when you tell yourself that, like if you go to Free Solo something, you're like, I'm just going to like do like the first like three or four moves. Then before you know it,
I'm
like
30
feet
up
in the air. Yeah, it's like, oh, shit.
For me, it's
I've got sandals on.
You go into a Stewart's gas station, you're just going to check out the ice cream selection.
Sure, and you leave with that white cheese jizz all over your face. So anyway, so I go to check out Benny's Root Canal, and at the bottom, the snow was like, there wasn't really that much, maybe like an inch or two. And so I started on up, and... the snow increasingly got a little bit deeper, but the snow conditions were perfect. It was like we had just a little bit of freezing rain on top of it, so there was like that light,
ooh, nice little crust,
nice crust on it, so you could really like kick step into it, and it would just grip really well. So I'm going up, and I continuously keep looking behind me, because we've done it before. I did it with you, Tyler.
Yes.
When you turn around, the views are epic. Mm-hmm. And I keep looking behind me, and I'm like, wow, it's so pretty. It's like a nice sunny day.
You almost killed him, didn't you?
No, I almost killed him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with a rock. Yeah.
It was so close. I'll never get a chance like that again. So I keep going, and then I turn at a certain point. I turn around, and so there is, you know, the really like the steepest section.
Yes,
I was right at the bottom of that, kind of where the other slide too is starting to branch off.
It looks like the fork of Poseidon when you view it from
Poseidon
big slide.
Poseidon quivers before him. Anyways, I was right there. And I could see ahead of me all these little like snow tornadoes, and I was like, "Oh shit, it looks windy up there." And then I turned around, and I was looking at a wall of charcoal gray. I could not see more than 20 feet behind me.
You know how in the movies everyone has a line like, "We're gonna need a bigger boat."
Yes.
What did you say?
I think I just said, "Well, fuck." So I was looking at it. I was like, that looks pretty ominous. Like, that does not look good. Like, it went from I could see big slide clearly to literally nothing.
To you may never eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch again.
Yeah. So I took a sip of my hot Gatorade, which I did. I boiled water and used Glacier Freeze Gatorade powder. So I had some hot Gatorade, and I did make it up that steep section, and then man, it was like right when I started into that, I saw a couple of snowflakes, and then it was just like someone flipped the switch, and all the fans turned on, and that 50-mile-per-hour wind, the crosswind, started hitting me. My visibility went from, you know, all the way to the top of Lower Wolfjaw to hand in front of the face. Couldn't see anything. And above those steep sections, the conditions started to get really weird. So in the center of the slide, at least I'm presuming I was in the center, it was all really thin snow and rock underneath with no ice. But since the rock was wet, you would take a step and just slide. Even if like you had spikes on, they can't dig into just rock, so you would just slide. So I started moving with the wind to the like the edge of the slide, but the wind had been depositing the snow there. It's drifting it. The snow was almost up to my armpits. Oh. And I was really cold.
And in case you don't know, he's a tall man.
Yeah, I'm 6'1", so it was deep.
Who's taller?
I would have been.
Snakes is like 7'16". He is an actual fucking serpent. Fucking slithery belly. So I'm there, and I'm just stuck in this deep snow. And I'm trying to go up, but going up in snow like that is not really working. And I can't move back to the center because of the conditions. And my feet were nice and toasty, thanks to my my plastic boots. But other than that, I was frozen solid. So I decided, I picked out a point, and it's that point, you know, like where the exit is right beneath like the technical part.
Top of the slide, right. Basically.
I was like, I'm gonna shoot for that, because at this point it might be better to go up there and take the trail down than it would be to try to descend the actual slide. And my, you know, I was like, my turnaround time is in like an hour and 15 minutes. So
that would be like a luge ride to hell if you went down the slide.
Right. So I was like, I can make it. So I set off. I just so determined. I actually had one of those little, I think the brand is Justin's, but it's like the little hazelnut butter.
Oh, they're so good. Oh my God. I've got like two in the cupboard right over there.
Oh, no, I have not.
I knocked this fucking thing out like goo style. Ripped the top off and just like the toothpaste where you roll it up and it just fucking squirts you in the back of the throat.
Yep.
Knocked that fucking thing out. And I just set off with as much vigor and purpose as I have ever fucking had. And after 40 minutes, I had maybe made it 12 feet. And so I said, fuck this shit, I'm going home. And I did go down the slide.
Oh, wow.
I turned around. I knew
did
I
you
just
slide down it?
So on that steep part.
Yeah, the very steep part.
I fucking sent it on my butt. Slid the whole like 40 feet into the bottom.
Oh, that's so
rad.
The
snow at the bottom had also drifted there. And when I came up that way, I knew the snow was very deep there, like waist deep. So I just sent it all the way down and hiked all the way back and licked my wounds. I definitely had like some good like wind burn on my face. Mm. But it was really fun. I know that the 80K... Winter Mountaineering School.
Jeremy Utz is famous on Instagram. What's your Insta, Jeremy?
Jeremiah underscore Supertramp.
Everyone's sharing these photos. Adirondack Mountain Club, ADK Winter Mountaineering School, shout out. They're going to be tackling that.
Right,
that,
so they're listening
slide.
To this to hear about the conditions of it. And I think, you know, if all we need is a little bit more snow. And it's
which
gonna be...
we're probably getting tonight. It
yeah, probably
like,
we're supposed to get tonight. So a little bit more snow. And honestly, it would be perfect for that kind of an event. I really want to go back and... have another go.
Yeah, I think me and Sealer from work are going to come visit you in a couple of weeks, and maybe we'll give it another go.
It should be quite theoretical.
Well, speaking of wintry conditions and deciding how to plan your trip, like the Krollster was asking us last week.
Was that a donut maker? Who is that person? I don't remember.
She's a hiker from Vermont. Wanted to know where to hike when the high peaks aren't ready to hike, Jeremy. You know, you're on this show.
That's a good nickname.
Yeah, New Hampshire, I think. The White Mountains.
Beautiful this time of year. Gorgeous.
Well, I just...
Sunshine State, New Hampshire. Go there.
I was looking up to do some hikes in the area. I couldn't decide where to go, but friends of the podcast, Brian Easton and Caitlin Jarvis, they went out to breakfast with me the other day, and through the window... of our little Lake Placid restaurant, I could see some
Whitney.
Peaks in the... It wasn't Whitney.
Jug. Hennessy.
Oh, it was Hennessy.
Yes!
So I decided...
I knew it.
After I said goodbye to Brian and Kate, I said...
I used to live right in front of Hennessy Mountain.
Right by Wolf Pond, right?
Yes.
Sure.
Delicious Wolf Pond.
So
shout out!
I could see the four bumps of Hennessy, which is this little mountain inside of the Mackenzie Mountain Wilderness. It's right next to... You guessed it, Big Burn, Lil John. Those are all mountains right next to Hennessy Mountain. And I decided maybe I could do a big loop up there. Made it. I was using Map and Compass, so I was thinking about the episode.
Old-timey navigation.
See, I saw the live story on Instagram, and I thought that you were just in the middle of the woods somewhere talking about maps and compasses. I didn't know that you were actually hiking.
I was actually bushwhacking.
I didn't know that. I thought you were just bushwhack. Like behind your house or something.
And you know what? I love bushwhacking because in an era of high use that we're experiencing now, if you go off trail and you have the skill set to confidently make your way through the woods by map and compass,
you can die in peace. And it's nice.
How nice.
Exactly.
Real nice.
I ended up then bushwhacking into the Saranac Lake Wild Forest and went up another little bump, which was really incredible. Actually found one of those summit canisters on top of
that's
the
cool.
mountain.
Really?
Yep, little. It was fun to see that again because those aren't...
So like the ones that you sign into that they have like out west?
Exactly.
How many people were signed into that?
There were dozens.
Really?
Yep, dozens.
I feel like Eric Schlimmer is rubbing off on you a little bit, and that's why you've done this. Shout out.
Speaking of Eric Schlimmer, Matt Bear and I actually, after all this bushwhacking, sat down to make the lists of the remaining 100 highest peaks in the Adirondacks that we have yet to climb. The good news for me is that I have 39 to go. The bad news for Matt Bear is he's got to do the 46 again. He has 46 peaks left in the 100 highest.
I'm less than halfway.
I would like to see
that
list. I'd like to see where I'm at on that.
The list is extensive. Of course, it's 100 mountains long.
It's also handwritten poorly. Poorly handwritten.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Hey, did you know in the 100 highest peaks in New York, well, at least in the Adirondacks, four of them are named Blue Ridge?
Yeah,
it's
and
a
it,
nice
and it gives you no description on them either. It's very hard to find out which one is which.
So I was dreaming with Matt Bear this week. And
that sounds weird.
I'm going to turn it over to Matt Bear now. What kind of foot stuff did you do, Matt Bear?
I bet nothing. Let's hear it.
What I did was I went out to the DeBar Mountain Wild Forest, and I hiked Loon Lake Mountain. Which is actually really awesome. I had never been there before. It's about a 5.5 mile round trip. You go through some old forest roads and then up a really awesome trail to the summit where the tower is fucked. You cannot get up that thing.
It will fuck you over.
Oh,
if you try
yeah.
To stand
is,
under
so
it.
There is a pile of jagged metal underneath this fire tower, and pieces were blowing off while I was up there.
It's a tetanus machine.
If you listen to an episode like 12 episodes ago, you can hear me and Young Robert's story of going up
there.
That's
right, yeah. And Yodel almost got killed by a piece of falling ice.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He hates towers now.
Yeah, he hates towers. And I also got viciously attacked by a grouse.
Shout out.
Actually, it didn't attack me. It just flew off into the woods next to me and scared the shit out of me.
I have no idea what a grouse is.
It's like a small turkey that can fly, but it's lazy.
Yeah. Chicken of the woods.
But when they like hang out by the side of the trail and they wait until you're like right up on them. And then
they can
just
hardly fly. It's loon.
And
like,
they just
can barely
explode out
fly.
Of the woods and make like this crazy sound and fly off.
Yeah,
and
they're
what do they sound like?
Heart attack landmines.
Yeah, it's like a little like a little plastic bag of meat that can sort of glide.
But I did also get to drive by Union Falls on my ride over there, and man,
did you dig it?
After the rain, dig falls, shout out. After the rain that we had gotten, it was ripping, man. It was coming down there. It was insane. It was awesome. It was a great drive over there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty nice.
It was a good time.
Justin Devendorf is in Studio 7 for the first time. He's been
super
excited. Huge fan of the show.
Yes.
Justin, what have you been up to this week?
I've been up to a lot. I did not hike any mountains like you guys did.
Hell yes! Oh, wait.
I know. I wish I did.
Well, technically, you didn't either. You just hiked partway up one.
He got farther than I did.
Yeah.
But did you
but
do
it was
Albany
wintery.
Foot stuff?
I did do Albany foot
Ooh.
Stuff.
Albany, state capital.
Absolutely. Love the state capital. Love Albany. My foot stuff this week, which I do pretty much every day, is I walk through Washington Park. And Washington Park is a big park in the kind of like the center-ish of Albany. And it's an old park. It's got a lot of really cool things. And it's right across the street from my house or my apartment building. Wonderful. I love it. What do you guys want to know about it?
Does it have statues?
It does have statues.
What's the coolest one?
The coolest one is a statue of Moses in the
Whoa.
Middle. Yeah, and it's got a cool history too. Not only the statue, but
But Moses himself.
But Moses himself, exactly. So
he did
some
shit.
So the Moses statue is literally of Moses, like, as he was parting the Red Sea, and then around it is four statues that represent the four
Egyptians.
Close. They represent the four stages of life: infancy.
You weren't close at all.
Yeah, no, I was trying to like humor him. Infancy, adolescence, adulthood, and old age. And literally, like, there's like a young child in one part of the statue, then like a adolescent, then a grown woman nursing a child, then an old man who's like
dead.
just like crinkled
old
back,
timey
old timey. There's other cool statues, but the cool part about Washington Park is that it used to be a graveyard. That whole area.
Now it's scary.
No, and not only that.
Haunted
as
fuck.
Not just any graveyard, a graveyard that used to hold tens of thousands of bodies at one point. It was the main graveyard of Albany, and where they would just bury their dead, in a decent sized part of the park. And then when it became a park in the 1880s, they had to obviously move the bodies.
They dug them up.
Bring out
hell
your
yes.
Dad.
Not only did they dig them up, they brought them by wagon to Albany Rural Cemetery in Menands, which is technically not in Albany, though it has the name, and reburied them. But let's think about this. If you're going to move tens of thousands of bodies, isn't
it? You can't tell anybody.
You do it by wagon.
You do it by wagon, but like, is it possible that you might have missed a few people?
Or, I mean, I'm sure they all look the same. I'd get them confused.
What I love about the park, besides the fact that there are no more dead bodies there, I hope, is
that... Oh, no, there definitely is. There definitely is. Upstate New York is full of murderous fucking people.
Well, I take away the main attraction.
That's true.
The corpses. If anything, pile them up. Mass grave.
It was at one point, but what I really like about that park in particular is because when you do live in a city and you don't have the ability, although there are some places in Albany County like Thatcher Park, the Albany Pine Bush, certainly going down by the river, it's important to realize like that parks are a really good way to enjoy nature and be able to experience the outdoors when you might not necessarily live in the wilderness that other people might be able to. And that's what I really like about it.
Nice.
Just being able to outside and, you know, just enjoy myself.
Have you ever listened to Footstuff Podcast while in this park?
I'm sure I have at some point.
Hell yeah.
I'm sure
so
I
technically
have.
We've been there.
Young Robert is in Studio 7 tonight. Young Robert, do you have any foot stuff you want to shout out or talk about?
Oh, yeah. Me and Jodelmeister took a short little walk out to Owen. Out to Owen Pond the other
Ooh,
morning.
Ooh, nice.
Owen Pond.
That was, I parked closer to Owen Pond, not Copper's Pond, so
you
it was only a half a mile walk in there to the pond. Really nice. Had a kind of strange interaction with who I thought was a hunter, but turned out to be just a man carrying a shotgun.
Okay, so you're a man carrying a shotgun, but you're not hunting?
Was he murdering deer?
Apparently. I mean, I don't know what he was doing.
What was he wearing?
I saw him on the way out.
Yeah, was he wearing camo or just like jeans?
If he was wearing a slicker, you could have hit him.
Yes.
He was just with a rock. Jeans. There was a lady who I assume was his girlfriend with him, but on the way back,
maybe he's going to murder him. Yeah, basically.
I think we got another person for the Albany Graves.
Yeah, I didn't stick around too long on the way back because he asked me if I was local, and I said yeah, and I asked him what he was hunting, and he just...
Yes, my friends and family know where I am today.
He just looked at me and said, I'm not hunting.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And so I said, oh, well...
Me too.
Said, oh, well, just have a great day, and I got out of there. Me and Yoda left.
That's great.
Smart decision.
Did not get killed on the way back to the car, so that was great.
No shotgun to the back of the head.
No, so I don't know. There's a guy out there carrying a gun, just practicing his Second Amendment rights, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, that's
it's
great.
It's a nice walk.
You can do that.
If you don't use it, you will lose it.
Beautiful view of a small little mountain across from Owen Pond. Anyone know what that is?
That might be Notch.
It's Notch, right?
Yeah.
Rocky?
Yeah, Rocky Knob.
Yeah, a little Rocky Knob.
Yep,
there.
That's Notch.
The last thing that Footstuff Podcast did this week as a team, we went down, Jeremy, Matt, Bear, Darnell, and myself, to Rock Sport in Glens Falls and had a beautiful day.
Got worked over.
We weren't hiking. Yeah. We were climbing some routes. Hand
well,
stuff.
Technically,
hand
we
stuff.
Walked from the car to the
hand
door.
And foot
and
stuff.
From
group hand stuff.
Group hand stuff.
Rock
yes.
Sport to Fast Track. That was
oh,
the highlight.
Yeah.
We tried the group
you,
send of the
if
the
you
boulder
route. Are in Queensbury, New York, and you
may
are
God
looking,
have mercy on your soul,
and you are looking for some fine dining. Let me tell you,
garlic.
Go to the Fast Track gas
it's
station.
It's brand new.
It is brand new. It is lovely inside. There is such a selection of treats, and the pizza is phenomenal.
Fresh.
Yeah. Buffalo chicken, highly recommend. Bacon, cheddar ranch. What other one did
there
you have?
There was a fucking lasagna
there
one.
There was a
I
lasagna pizza. None
lasagna
of us got
pizza.
It, though.
No.
What did you get? What else did you get?
I had buffalo chicken.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
I also ate some of those packets of that weird onion relish
oh,
shit.
I missed out on that
it's
this
like
time.
It's like all vinegary and
yeah,
salty. Yeah, I just
good.
Ate some of those. It
yeah,
was good.
That is good, yeah.
We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to try to get to a fast track, and then we're going to talk about some hiker news.
Yeah. Dear God.
Delicious Matt Bear, you have some hiker news for us.
I do. So, some hiker news for the ages.
Ooh.
Yes. So, this story comes to us from New Mexico.
Which
so,
is way better than the old one, in
yes,
my opinion.
It is. It is. Heather Anish Anderson sets the Triple Crown hiking speed record.
Wow. So, what is the Triple Crown again?
So, the Triple Crown is hiking the Appalachian Trail, the yeah. Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail.
Ooh.
Yeah, so she has set the Triple Crown hiking speed record.
Why didn't you do that, Tyler? Why did you do the why did you do the one in New Zealand instead of doing the Continental
I
Divide?
I did the one in New Zealand because
it was
I,
easier.
It was
because you didn't have the resolve. I'm sorry, am I interrupting? Go ahead and tell us why you couldn't complete the Triple Crown.
Because when I decided to go on a hike from December through April, I knew it would be easier if that hike were in the Southern Hemisphere.
See, this is why he did complete it. That's a smart choice. That was a good idea.
I made it through the Great Basin of Wyoming in January.
You could not hike through Wyoming in June. You would die of hypothermia.
It's so cold. So when did Heather start
I'm sorry,
her
yeah,
quest?
I'm sorry.
Well, so she finished on November 9th. After an 8 month,
it's very recent. Is that very recent?
It is yes, very recent news. More relevant news.
For foot stuff. That's
for foot stuff.
We got rid of the trains, and now we're bringing you the news.
every week. Almost relevant. So she finished this 8-month, 8,000-mile journey in Grants, New Mexico, at the southern terminus of the CDT. She's from Bellingham, Washington, and became the fastest female triple crowner, finishing in 251 days, 20 hours, and 10 minutes.
For all of it?
For all of it.
What the fuck?
So think about that. She did this in 8 months, and it was 8,000-plus miles. She was doing over 1,000 miles a month.
Wow.
And she was averaging a pace of 31 miles a day.
Wow.
How many did you average, Tyler?
On your shorter hike? I averaged 21.72 miles a day. But
10 miles faster.
Yeah. Very, very mediocre. What about the AT?
On the Appalachian Trail, I hiked 24.5 miles.
Yep, middle of the pack. What about the TA?
Oh, I think that was more of a Matt Bear binge drinking festival. 16 miles a day maximum.
Oh, man. So she became the fastest female triple crowner. Additionally, she became the first female triple crowner. So she has done all three of these three times.
Wow. For fuck's sakes, why?
That is so cool.
Oh, man. It is ridiculous.
I'm curious, she finished with the Continental Divide Trail.
Yeah, so she started on the AT, going northbound, then she did the PCT, also northbound, and then she finished on the CDT, going southbound.
Wow.
Wow.
Yep. As of starting this hike, only four other people in history have completed the calendar year triple crown. So, very few people have ever done this, and she is the fastest calendar year hiker and the first woman triple.
I'm pretty sure fewer than about 500 people have ever done the triple crown.
It sounds very intense.
Yeah, it's a lifetime achievement.
You should do it, Tyler. You have to do it in less than a year.
Actually, and I have some more news regarding the triple crown. My friend Groucho, who I joined
Groucho.
Yep.
Okay.
About 2 months ago, I joined Groucho in Leadville, Colorado, and hiked a section
I heard about that on Footstuff Podcast.
He just finished as well about a week ago.
Nice.
Not too many days before Anish did. And he actually became one of the first people to ever do the Triple Crown all trails southbound.
Ooh,
so he did the triple crown southbound.
How many people have done that? Do you know?
I don't know.
Probably
don't
not many.
Many.
Yeah.
I don't think many at all. He and his trail family all got wrong way gang tattoos because they went southbound, the opposite direction of what's normally done.
That's awesome.
Gave his trail family tattoos.
Shouldn't you get
tattoos?
One?
I haven't done the triple crown yet.
Oh, when you do the triple crown.
Sure,
okay.
Maybe.
All right.
He gave them tattoos?
Yeah, Groucho.
Oh, he actually was the one
Groucho
tattooing them.
Groucho administered the tattoos to
his
team.
Wow. Wow. What did they look like?
Hepatitis is real. Cool. Just saying, Groucho. Just saying that. But
also,
sick.
Shout out. Someone else is currently on trail pursuing the calendar triple. His name is Prodigy. And if done, he'll be the first person of color to complete the triple crown.
Matt Bear.
Jeremy.
Tyler?
You might recall from Footstuff Podcast episodes gone by that young Robert brought us a delightful array of poetry into Studio 7. It was the most culture we've ever received as a group.
We ate cheese the whole time.
Yep.
And young Robert has returned to Studio 7 to donate his words to Footstuff Nation. Young Robert, take it away.
Dim the lights.
Here I am back again. So this is something that I wrote out in the Johnsbrook Valley a couple years ago.
Shout out.
Just lying down on the ground late at night looking up at the stars.
Oh, I thought you were going to be face down.
Yeah, most people are face down in the mud.
Yeah, in the valley.
All right,
that's
stars better. I get it. Tonight the sky was putting on a show for me, and I was the only one in the audience. Saving my applause for the curtain call of dawn, my eyes became drunk with the universe. Stretched out on the dirt, some strange god laughing from behind some distant dynamo, as I gazed upon the beauty of my insignificance, a grain of sand in a flash of light spread out across nothing. Astral roof sheltering me in my boreal darkness, the embers of my heart smoldering with excitement. stars making love across my soul, speechless meadows of galaxies blooming. A divine breath illuminated, and soon I longed to kiss infinity's lips. So I did the only thing that made sense and cannonballed into the sky.
Wow.
Whoa.
Hell yes.
Thank you.
You dropped it like it was hot.
Yes. He literally just dropped the microphone.
we can't have you do that, Robert. We need this equipment. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to bring you a deep dive on Adirondack surveying. Hey, gang, and welcome back to Footstuff Podcast. We're going to talk about a subject that deserves a deep dive. Now, when we think of old-timey things, we think of churning butter.
Death.
Polio. Cobbled
cannibalism,
streets. The demons. Dust Bowl. These are all benchmarks of old-timey days. But speaking of benchmarks, Matt Bear, we have some surveying to talk about tonight, which is very old-timey.
Well, I'm going to start us off in old-timey times. So we're going to go back even further than old-timey times to ancient old-timey times.
By the will of the gods continue, Matt Bear.
So, surveying has occurred since humans started building the first large structures. So the most notable of these being the Great Pyramid of Giza.
That giant file cabinet in Vermont.
Yep, that
yes! I've seen that!
Shout out
it's in Burlington,
to the file cabinet,
yes.
Right next to Switchboard.
There's a picture of me on Facebook trying to climb that, yes. And my friend Mike trip. The
Nubbins will die
circle.
On the hill of defending the
full
file
circle.
Cabinet.
Speaking of other tall structures, Matt, like the filing cabinet in Burlington, you were talking about the Pyramid of Giza.
I was, yeah. They were built in about 2700 BC, and you can observe almost perfect squareness on these pyramids, and they have
a
very direct north-south orientation, which was very unusual for the time. So that was kind of the first
ancient aliens.
Yeah, the first notable kind of surveying technique, just using basic ropes and stuff like that to line out the buildings.
But the Europeans weren't far behind.
No. So in 2500 BC, Stonehenge, you guys might know that. Ancient aliens, shout out.
Sure. Chariots of the Gods,
yep.
Shout out.
This was laid out with your basic peg and rope geometry. I'm sure you're all familiar with that.
Yes.
The peg and rope geometry.
That was my nickname in high school.
Yes, peg and rope geometry?
Yes.
Okay. Did it have something to do with the way you were conceived?
It did. Not sure of the whole story, though, so we won't get into it. All right. Continue, please.
So surveying was then used throughout Roman and medieval times, all those old-timey times, mostly to establish land and property boundaries. And then we go from there. A lot of other shit happened that I'm not going to get into because this is not a history lesson.
Sure, the fall of Rome, that whole empire that loved putting their feet up, all
happened,
that stuff.
A lot
before
of
the Romans,
happened.
Though, the Greeks were actually into surveying.
Making salads.
They were.
They put
they
yogurt
were.
On
they
everything.
Developed
it's
a tool.
Delicious.
What's I found it. They developed the diopter, 120 BC. It was fitted with protractors and used to measure angles. That was helpful.
Whoa.
That's actually cool.
Yeah, that is
helpful.
Actually, which ties in to our next segment, which is Nubbin's intro to surveying for people that don't know about surveying, taught by someone that knows nothing about surveying.
Wait, Nubbins?
Yes.
I don't know anything about surveying.
Then this, sir, is the course for you.
All right.
Let's see if I can read my handwriting. So it all started with the creation of the theodolite, which is a tool that most modern surveying is based on. It has unknown origins, but dates back to about the 16th century. It is used to measure the horizontal and vertical angles. Its modern form consists of a telescope, which is mounted to a swivel, both horizontally and vertically. It is leveled with a spirit level. The crosshairs in the telescope permit accurate alignment with the object sighted. It is mounted on a tripod with adjustable legs. The theodolite is used in the field to obtain precise angular measurements for triangulation purposes. This can be used in road building, tunnel alignment, other civil engineering work, which leads us to talk about the great outdoors and how surveying was used there.
It is important because there, and this is going to make our flat earthers pretty upset. There was a schism because people were doing plane surveying where you assume you're measuring a flat surface, but as we know, Earth is an oblate spheroid, and so they came up with geodetic surveying, which takes Earth's curvature into account, which makes measurements really difficult but important to calculate. And the first person who really started to do this in the Adirondacks that we talk about is Verplank Colvin, but he was not the first. Before I turn it over to Justin Devendorf, he was not the first.
Who was the first?
Well, good question, Jeremy. In the year 1772, Archibald Campbell, with a team of Native Americans, were trying to follow the northern border of the Totten and Crossfield line. And they made it to about the base of Coney Mountain near Tupper Lake.
Delicious Coney Mountain.
They drove a stake into the ground. It's thought they stopped there because they ran out of rum.
Tupper Lake Triad, shout out.
And despite running out of rum, they made a clear line of sight towards Mount Marcy. And they said, okay, this is the border of the Totten and Crossfield line. Then in 1797, the McCombs Purchase happened, and they were trying to divvy up the land to give, I believe, soldiers from the American Revolutionary War land, and they sent one Charles Broadhead to the summit of Giant Mountain, so he became the first person with a recorded ascent of an Adirondack High Peak, and then he made multiple other first ascents, like Tabletop, Boundary between Iroquois and Algonquin, and his goal was to try to sync up with Archibald Campbell's line. But he couldn't find it. Turns out he was only about a half a mile away. If he had hiked another mile, he would have gotten to the line.
God damn.
But this is important, and it sets the scene for one Verplank Colvin, who decided that he would charge himself with the task of surveying the landscape holistically north of the Mohawk River. And we brought Justin Devendorf from Albany to the heart of the Adirondacks here in Keene to tell us a tale of Adirondack surveying, starring the one, the only, Verplank Colvin. Great name or greatest name, by the way? Verplank. Hello, this is my son, Verplank.
Archibald is better. If your name was Verplank Archibald, that's the best name ever.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. That is a great intro, and I cannot wait to talk about Verplank Colvin. So I guess what we got to first get into is really, where did it all begin? Where did Verplank Colvin's life start, and how were the influences that he had in his life, you know, able to make him the environmentalist, great surveyor of the Adirondacks that we know him as today? So just to give you a little history about his upbringing, he was born on January 4th, 1847 in Albany.
Now, yes.
Yes, hell yes. And not only that, so
Near to that grave site next to the big mass
grave?
Like,
right up the street from the mass grave.
Hell yes.
Actually, right up the street from the mass grave.
I think close to that that Indian cafe, too, that has the mango lassies.
Ooh, that place is real good. Yeah,
real nice.
But I was telling you guys earlier, I live right around the corner from where Verplank Colvin was born, where he grew up. It's right on Western Ave, and it's right between South Lake Ave and Quail Street. There's a lot of streets in Albany named after birds. Random fact, I know.
Well, Eric Schlimmer's Cradle of the Union will be able to uncover and decode which birds and why.
So Verplank Colvin had a really good life growing up. He was born into a pretty wealthy family. His dad was a state senator and later became the district attorney of Albany. His dad's name was Andrew James Colvin, and his mother's name was Margaret Crane Ailing. And he was homeschooled for his early years and then went to Albany Academy. Right when the Civil War breaks out, his family moves from Albany to Nassau, which is in eastern Rensselaer County. And if you know anything about Rensselaer County, and in particular the eastern part of it that butts up against Vermont, it's very rural, and there's a lot of like places to explore. So with basically hundreds, if not thousands of acres of land to explore, this is really where Colvin got his interest in learning about the outdoors and the environment. And he would spend days out in the wilderness just learning, just like experiencing it, living it. And like,
what was the first place that he ended up surveying near Albany?
Oh, he surveyed the Helderberg Mountains, which is a mountain range. It's actually an escarpment.
Ooh. There we go.
Yeah, right?
Cliffs. I love a good escarpment.
Yeah, cliffs on cliffs. Mm. It's about 10 miles or so west of Albany. It's now primarily consists of John Boy Thatcher State Park.
Shout out.
Oh, absolutely. John Boy Thatcher's my boy. He's
my Thatcher.
But his love was the outdoors, was the wilderness, was being outside and being one with the environment. So he set his love free and stopped being a lawyer and devoted all of his time to just the outdoors. And
see, I think all of us have a little Verplank in us.
I think so too.
A lot of weird comments coming from that side of the studio tonight.
I'm not hating
Blake
that.
Mills.
There's a joke that no one will get.
Wow.
Oh, yes. But so, Tyler, you were talking about the first recorded ascent of in the High Peaks earlier. Mm-hmm. Verplank Colvin, when he traveled up to the Adirondacks, he actually had the first recorded ascent of Seward.
Didn't get it named after him, though.
Did not get it named after him.
1870, he climbed Seward.
Yeah, absolutely. So he is someone who's known in the Adirondacks, but he also had a presence across the country too. And so I mentioned earlier that when the Civil War broke out, he went to go move to Nassau. As I was doing my research, I found out that he had a half-brother named James Colvin, who actually served in the Union Army during the Civil War.
Huh.
And what I found interesting was, and James saw some action and fought in battles, and he was actually the aide-de-camp to General William Tecumseh Sherman, who, if you don't know, was the Union general who marched from Atlanta to Savannah. Marched all the way across Georgia. It's Sherman's March to the Sea, and left a trail of destruction in his wake. But,
hell yeah!
Hell yes.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, kind of a sore subject, even. But so what Colvin did was, in the summer of 1870, he went to Richmond, Wilmington, Charleston, and all these were places where James had fought. But then he traveled west. He went west, and that was when he really became known as somebody who went to the Rocky Mountains, and that was where he wrote in 1871 The Dome of the Continent, which was also published in Harper's Magazine, and that actually earned him a really good honor. So the Rocky Mountain Club, which is based in Denver, Colorado, awarded him an honorary membership as an artist and literary man. That was literally what they called
literary
him.
Huh. Man.
Literal man.
So I have an excerpt from Dome of the Continent, which I would like to read as well. Of the whole Rocky chain, Colorado Territory possesses the chief mountains, certainly the most famous, for here, amidst a multitude of others, each one a monarch in itself, rise Pikes and Long's Peaks, names linked with the earliest history of the West. Farther west, Gray's Peak, Mount Lincoln, and a host besides tower, with summits crested in eternal snow, and circling, surround these beautiful and wondrous valleys. Here is a snowy range. the icy mountain wall, which parts Orient from Occident, the Divide, as it is particularly called, where melting snow discharged their waters east and west to the world's greatest and most widely separated oceans.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
So I didn't actually know that Verplank Colvin went to Colorado and had those experiences in the other part of the country. I did know that he climbed Mount Marcy. His first ascent was in 1869, and then he climbed Seward Mountain in 1870. Then he apparently went to Colorado. But what he wrote after his experience on Seward Mountain is what eventually caused New York State's Forest Preserve to be created. His advice was heeded by the likes of Lewis Marshall in the New York State Assembly and the Forever Wild Act in New York State's Constitution. Article 14 was written so that New York's wildlands could be protected as forever wild forests.
Absolutely. And not only that, he was somebody who really wanted to, like you said, he was somebody who wanted to preserve the wilderness, you know, and make it so that it was available for generations of New Yorkers to come, and that's what Forever Wild does.
So yes. when Verplank Colvin helped establish the Forest Preserve, he at the same time concurrently was the superintendent of Adirondack Surveying.
Yes.
And he climbed a ton of peaks. He had first ascents up peaks like Skylight, for example.
And he hogged all the glory. He hogged it all. Because he had all the famous guides with him, too, like Old Man Phelps and all those people. He would give them zero fucking shout-outs. He hogged the glory.
But he did. He earned a lot of that glory. One of the things that he created and put on top of the theodolite was his Stan Helio, so that he could...
Those are those shoes with the wheels on the heels, right?
No.
Oh.
The Stan Helio, it spun around a little metallic spinner that went on top of the theodolite, and he could see it to capture accurate measurements from the different peaks. He became obsessed. He returned to Marcy year after year to reclimb that peak, to measure it and get an exact calculation of its height. He knew it was the high point of Essex County, but he wanted to see exactly how high.
You know, it's funny he didn't do that with Blake and Cooch and Cliff and Nye. He didn't go back to those ones to resurvey them. Huh?
It's kind of a issue. Interesting. There.
Interesting.
There is one tale that's worth retelling. In 1872, Colvin and his men journeyed from September 2nd at Port Henry. They proceeded to Plattsburgh by steamer. So if you want to redo this challenge, you have to procure a steamer. You have to sail it to Plattsburgh. He then sent his men to climb from Plattsburgh up Whiteface.
Jesus.
Yes,
Jesus.
He did.
From that, Plattsburgh?
Yep, exactly. And so he left from... He got up there on September 6th. Spent the night in Lake Placid. Then by the 9th of September, they headed into Indian Pass. On the 10th, they visited Wallface Ponds and climbed Wallface Mountain. Then he urged his men on further. By the 12th, they were leaving for Calamity Pond, which is, you know, my favorite
pond.
We
are not telling that motherfucking story.
And they went up the Opalescent on the 13th and made it to Marcy the next day.
Jesus,
so that's one hell
trip.
Of a journey. Yeah, September 2nd in Port Henry, and then you arrive via steamer in Plattsburgh, and from there hike all the way to Mount Marcy by about the 14th.
He had several crazy Marcy stories. I read the one where they were... going, and they didn't want to. There was a crazy storm coming in because it was in like the fall, a snowstorm, ice storm, and they didn't want to get stuck in Panther Gorge. But he would just said fuck it and just kept going.
Yep,
hell yeah,
they
pretty
even
awesome.
Built bark wigwams to stay warm at Four Corners on one of these trips.
Ooh, question: what, Tyler, is your favorite Verplank Colvin marker in the High Peaks?
Oh, maybe the one on Dix.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Oh,
it
yes.
is a good one.
I like the one
on Skylight as well.
There's one on Gothics too.
Yep.
He has a bunch of his original markers still.
Yeah, you gotta find
into the peaks.
Find them all. Gotta catch them all.
Gotta catch them all.
But leave them there for
yes,
us
yes,
to
please,
enjoy.
Please
yes,
for God's
important.
Sake, leave them there.
Do not pry them off with a crowbar.
So anyways, I in my research came across a journal entry from February 15th, 1877, passing through the southern portion of the crest, parentheses, Seventh Lake Mountain, we found the carcass of a deer killed by a panther. The guides were now all excitement and followed the cougar's trail eagerly. A shout announced that he had been encountered, and rushing forward, I came upon the monstrous creature, coolly defiant, standing at the brow of the precipice on some dead timber, little more than 20 feet from me. Quickly loading the rifle, I sent a bullet through his brain.
Jesus. Yeah, that'll
vicious.
Do it.
Vicious is right.
And on top of being a mad killer, he was also a mad scientist of math. It's really fun to look through his old reports on how he calculated the summits using, thanks to capturing data from the Stan
Helio
theodolites and taking barometric pressures, always with the baseline being the mean tide of the Hudson River at Albany, which I find to be incredible. So this man is as reliable as the tides in Albany. One of the data points, he's showing how he calculated the height of Mount Marcy from the known height of Haystack. He calculated through triangulation that the distance between the highest point of New York, Mount Marcy, and the third highest point, Mount Haystack, was 6,600 feet. And I did the math. If you divide that by a mile, that's 1.25 or a mile and a quarter between the two peaks as the crow flies. I don't know how many wades that is, but maybe one of our listeners can send us that. But then he had to take all these sines and cosines of angles and take all these logs, and then he had to correct for Earth's curvature. And anyway, he ended up getting, after a few visits to Mount Marcy, a height of 5,344 feet above sea level, which is the height it has been determined to be today. And he did all of this by taking angles, and kids stay in school because then he did some math.
Don't do drugs either.
Jeremy?
A lot.
It's funny that you say you talk about the science of math. Did you know that there was a guy in his crew named Bill Nye?
Whoa.
Yeah, famous guy. He's a guide from North Elba. There was an unglamorous end to Verplank Colvin's historic surveying career. He was finally let go after Theodore Roosevelt, who was New York State governor at the time in 1900, Theodore Roosevelt transferred Verplank Colvin's duties to the state, so his term as the superintendent of Adirondack Surveying was over, but he left behind a legacy. And one thing that I discovered was that a young man by the name of Bob Marshall, only a few decades later, discovered a copy of Verplank Colvin's book, Report of the Topographical Survey of the Adirondack Wilderness for the year 1873. Bob Marshall found that on a bookshelf in Knollwood, his family camp on Lower Saranac Lake. And Bob Marshall spent the rest of his life trying to match firsthand the exhilaration he felt while reading about uncharted wildlands. He tried to incorporate that into his life. And it did. He did. He became a wilderness champion. He got out all the way up into the Brooks Range in Alaska exploring. And I would like to think that the surveying done by Verplank Colvin emboldened Bob to go out into the woods and explore, and it's changed a lot of our lives to get out and explore in Adirondack wilderness. So nearly three decades spent surveying these Adirondack wildlands, Colvin got to know Adirondack wilderness as well as anyone. Yet he wrote, "Few fully understand what the Adirondack wilderness really is. In this remote section, filled with the most rugged mountains, where unnamed waterfalls pour in snowy tresses from the dark overhanging cliffs, the adventurous trapper or explorer must carry upon his or her back blankets and heavy stocks of food. Yet, though the woodsmen and woodswomen may pass their lifetimes in some of the wilderness, it is still a mystery to them."
Mm.
I love that.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
Woohoo!
Verplank Colvin.
Verplank.
We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to bring you some wonderful plugs. Jeremy, do you have any shout outs?
Yes. So shout out number
follow that one, but I mean go for it.
Shout out number one obviously goes to the Snow Messiah. Shout out number two is to the Winter Mountaineering School. They had a little comment on our picture the other day, and I know they're coming out to the Johnsbrook Lodge to conduct some advanced courses here pretty soon, so just giving a shout out their way, and if winter mountaineering is something you're interested in, it's good to learn from professionals.
Look them up. Justin Devendorf, you drove all the way up from our state capital, our beautiful capital.
City of Almonds.
I'm going to start saying that. That's really good. Yes. Well, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Our number one fan.
I had a really good time. But I want to shout out my mom, dad, sister, and brother. I want to shout out my friends that I go hiking with.
Mike and
Well, I don't go Eric? Hiking with... Mike and Eric are my friends. I don't go hiking with them. I'd like to, but...
Come on, Mike and Eric.
I want to shout out Sean, Chelsea, Tiffany, Jim, and Everett, who are my hiking crew. We all go hiking together. And I wanted to plug my Instagram page.
Yes, and the Twitter.
And my Twitter. So my Instagram page is Photos of Albany. It's photos with a Z. It's very important. Do not put an S. Put a Z where photos. The S should be. But Photos of Albany. I post pictures of the
history. Sounds like a Green Day song.
It doesn't. I post pictures of the history and beauty of Albany and the surrounding area. I define surrounding area pretty broadly.
Just like Albany defines Grave pretty broadly.
Yes, absolutely. So it's like a fun little project that I have going on. I really enjoy it. It's a nice little thing that I do. My Twitter at JDev with four V's, JAYVVVV.
So many V's.
You need
so
all four. Time. Absolutely. But I love social media and it's a lot of fun, and it clearly got me to be on Footstuff, so it all worked out.
Hell yes.
Thank you, Justin. Delicious Matt Bear.
One quick shout out to Protect Our Winters, who are a great environmental organization.
I never would have guessed that.
That are mobilizing the outdoor sports community against climate change. Check them out, protectourwinters.org. They are on Protect Our Winters on Instagram, doing some great work.
I'm down with that cause.
Friend of the pod, Maddie, I believe, does a lot of work with them. Yep.
Shout out.
Maybe she'll get on here one day.
Hell yes. And finally, we had one beautiful 5-star review come in from Alyssa
Medina. We only read the 5-star ones.
If you left
send
a 4-star review, please take it back. We don't want it.
Alyssa Medina says, just found this podcast. So glad that I listened to the Halloween one first.
Oh, and God.
Worst episode we've done.
I would recommend, though, the more recent episodes are better. I would listen to them in reverse.
Do not listen to episodes 1 through 4.
No, listen to them backwards from now backwards.
Yes.
You'll get that's fun that way, I think. So Alyssa goes on to say, you guys make me want to spend my weekends hiking, eating cheese, and going to new places in the Adirondacks.
That's what we do.
She says, thanks for making my hour and a half commute bearable.
Jesus, where did she commute to?
I can imagine. Maybe the Helderberg Cliffs.
One of the Blue Ridges, I think.
Maybe the commute's not very far. She just doesn't drive. Maybe she crawls to work. Or crab walks. I've seen people, hipsters now, are crab walking to work.
Jesus.
It's harder to spill your latte if you have that side-to-side motion.
Yeah, that avocado latte.
They're sidling
latte
all the way to work.
Beautiful. Well, thank you all very much. I actually do have one call to action this week.
Uh-oh.
And actually two, now that I think of it. The first is check out Adirondack Wilderness Advocates on Facebook. There are a lot of updates soon, including new fire towers that might be open to the public. Join Adirondack Wilderness Advocates on Facebook. They've got 3,500 followers and only in about 2 years' time. Pretty good. Keep going their way for news about Adirondack Wilderness. Also, friend of the pod, Mr. Tim Bahuniak, has an article.
The Baloney Man.
Baloniacs.
He writes for F-Stoppers, which is this great photography page. And
I never would have guessed that was a photography page.
He wrote an article called Clear Evidence to Stop Geotagging Specific Locations of Your Nature.
Oh, that was a great article. It was really good.
He's good. He writes
great
it
job,
from a
Tim.
Good perspective, and he gives good reasons
it's
on
both
sides.
It's better than his normal baloney or baloney-esque topics.
Yes, exactly.
Stop geotagging those natural spaces. And then also, we have a new Facebook follower today. It's Kevin James.
The?
why are we shouting out individual Facebook followers?
Thank you, Kevin James.
Like Paul Blart?
Yeah. Here comes the boom. Good night, everybody. Keep it wild.